Welcome to our Lead to Succeed podcast, where we share leadership and business growth insights, both from our own experiences and that of our guests. We're the hosts. I'm Rebecca Jenkins, founder of RGen, helping companies to grow by finding, gaining and growing the best clients.
And I'm Callum, sharing my perspectives from both being an entrepreneur and working in a variety of different companies. Whether you lead a team or a business, you'll find practical tips, inspirational insights and ideas as we discuss a wide range of leadership topics. So with that, here's today's episode.
Welcome. Thank you very much for joining us, our listeners and our viewers. We have Herb Cogliano joining us today from Boston, USA. Big welcome to you, Herb.
I just wanted to say hello, Rebecca. Big shout out to you and all your listeners and looking forward to a great chat.
We are going to have a great chat, Herb. I know we're going to have a really great chat because we've got some amazing insights that you're going to be sharing with us. So Herb leads his own advisory practice, leveraging the Scaling Up Performance Platform. And he's the professor of the Scaling Up Master's Business Course at the Growth Institute. And one thing that I absolutely love about what you do when you talk about scale up and leadership is that you have so much experience in this area already, over 33 years of experience. And I say to anybody that's looking for a business coach or a business advisor, make sure you find somebody who's got the experience, who's been through those challenges that you are facing. And we're going to be talking about some of those challenges that we face in scaling a business. Now, Herb focuses on making sure you have a healthy cash flow, accountability, which I think is absolutely crucial, and of course, flawless execution. So looking forward to having this deep dive. And we're going to be talking in particular about how to be an impactful CEO and Rockefeller habits. So thank you very much for joining us, Herb. We're looking forward to getting into this.
I'm very excited to be here. And your energy, Rebecca, is amazing. I just feel the energy and I'm raring to go.
Oh, well, I feel yours too. So let's make this a very energetic and insightful session and adding lots of value, which I know we both really feel is important to do.
Yes.
So let's dive into this question of what makes an impactful CEO. You must have worked with hundreds of CEOs, Herb. So what do you think makes an impactful one?
Yeah, I think there's five traits of highly successful and high impact CEOs. Number one, are they growth oriented? Do you know the market growth rate? And do you have a mindset to wanting double or even more that growth rate within a fairly short period of time of every 3 to 5 years? Why? Your markets are changing. The competition is being very opportunistic. And if you're not growth oriented, you can miss it. The second thing is A players that work in your company want bigger futures. And if you're not able to provide an organization and a vision of growth, they're not likely to stay for the long term. So growth orientation as a key mindset is important for dealing with your market, in dealing with keeping and retaining amazing A players on your bus.
Well, let's go into the whole five maybe. Oh. And then come back, because I love the fact that you said growth mindset and growth in markets. That is so critical. And I don't know if you'll agree with me on this, Herb, but I think the mindset is everything when it comes to growing a business. So we'll dive into that, but could you just give us the overview of the five key components that make an impactful CEO?
So the second one is coachable learners. They have great self-awareness and they understand their commitment to not only develop and invest in themselves, but in their entire team. Third one is, are they strategic thinkers? Are they taking time to learn about different trends around the world? Are they looking at different market dynamics? Because a lot of CEOs they're so involved in the day-to-day, they're not reserving enough time to be strategic and thoughtful about the right joint ventures, the right partnerships. Number four, are they accountable executors? Are they willing to hold themselves accountable? And are they willing to coach up or coach out members of their team that are not accountable to themselves and to other team members? And then finally, are they effective communicators? Because having a vision, having a set of values, having a purpose and a set of priorities, and being willing to be transparent and communicate over and over to keep the team on course is critical for a high impact CEO.
So did those come in any particular priority order, Herb? If you had to prioritize those, did you give them to us in their priority or not?
No, I believe they're inclusive and equally important. But what I find, Rebecca, is that CEOs come to the table with different leanings towards some or the other. Some may be great growth orientation. They may be coachable learners, but they're having challenges with keeping people accountable, being willing to coach up or being willing to coach out when they need to, and they may not be effective communicators. So they all come with a blend, but the goal is to help them develop in the five areas over time.
And what do you see, Herbert, as kind of the number one challenge that CEOs are facing in embracing these 5 points and being that impactful CEO? Is there one particular area that stands out?
I think the CEO, I'm hearing that they're challenged by the development of the senior team, which is very important, but they're not always self-aware of where their gaps are for their own development. So what I like to do is create awareness about, yes, we are going to make not only high impact CEOs, but high impact leadership teams. But you need to be able to look in the mirror first at yourself, become self-aware, and then we're going to look at the senior team together and help them develop with you.
Well, so often, and we know the economy is tough right now, and we know that people are leaving businesses because they're working in a toxic environment or the leaders aren't supporting them. And it can be a time when development and training budgets get cut.
Sure.
And that's not going to be very helpful in developing teams. So I think it's great that you're saying it starts with the CEO investing in their own development and training, and also in developing and training their teams. So would you say this is hugely important to the success of a business in terms of scaling, profitability, healthy cash flow, that they take some of that profitability and some of that cash and invest it in their own development and that of their teams?
Yeah. You know, we talk about scaling up your company and doing your 10x whenever possible or even further. But I think the real secret to scaling up your company is scaling up the people in it. Because when your people have a greater awareness, a greater skill set, a greater development, that development is what enables the business to scale in strategy and execution and client performance. It's very hard to do it the other way. Like, I don't find a lot of businesses where your people are held constant and you 10X the business and the people stay the same. That creates an imbalance and you'll ultimately cause yourself harm and drama. So the key is to developing your people at a rate that's consistent with the pace of you want to grow your business at the same time.
You have probably come across this, Herb, as I have, when I hear CEOs say, well, if I invest in training and then they leave, I've made that investment and I don't see a return on it. Do you hear that at all?
I have heard it, but I don't hear it a lot because the CEOs that come to me are very growth oriented and they understand the development of themselves and the team is a priority. I probably wouldn't be a good fit as a coach for a CEO that had that mindset.
Because that very, very much is a non-growth mindset.
Yes.
And you talked about that at the beginning as being a critical part of the five steps. So having that growth mindset and having that growth market perspective.
Yeah.
What?
Rebecca, I was just going to mention earlier before the call, I told you we just had a scaling up summit at Harvard University. And one of the professors talked about the difference between a fixed and a growth mindset. And a fixed mindset is a know-it-all, the smartest in the room. And a growth mindset is a learn-it-all, a person who puts learning, experiential development over, I can't make a mistake, I have to be perfect, I have to be viewed as at the top of my game. And there's a big difference in companies like that performance between a growth-minded and a fixed-minded leadership team.
I am very fascinated in this, Herb, and I'm sure my audience, our audience will be as well, because we are moving away from that, the perspective that a leader has to have all the answers.
Yes.
We are moving away from that, thank goodness, because that allows our teams to flourish. How far along that sort of line do you think we are? Do you think we are moving fast towards having that kind of mindset and approach to leadership? Or have we still got a long way to go?
First of all, the CEO doesn't have to have all the answers, but he should have all the questions. Mm-hmm. That's the real difference between a growth-minded CEO that I talk with. I think to your question, Rebecca, I've seen some companies have some amazing progress with this high-impact mindset, where they bring the right people on their team, they trust, they're open-minded, they listen to different perspectives, and collectively, with that intelligence, they come up with great solutions, regardless of who brought it to the table.
Yeah.
And so for me, over my 30-plus year journey, I've tried to align myself more and more with the companies that have the growth mindset. So my paradigm is I keep seeing more and more of it. And I hope it spreads.
I hope it spreads. I hope it spreads fast because it is so significant. It is so important. And it really helps people in businesses, the teams, to feel part of that business because it's collaborative.
Yes. Yes.
And we want more of that in business today, because if you feel you're collaborating, you're feeling more fulfilled, you're more likely to stay with the business. I am going to dive into, I know our audience love to hear about challenges.
Sure.
So I hope you don't mind this question coming up, Herb, which is, was there a moment in time, because I know there was for me, and I'd be interested to hear this from your perspective. Was there a moment in time when you realized that you had to change your own leadership. I mean, you've grown businesses.
Sure.
So was there a time when you realized you had to make a change?
Yeah, thank you. I came from a closely held family business.
Mm-hmm.
Mother, father, brothers. And I think there was a time where we thought we could make all the decisions and they would be right. But as we started to grow and as the market started to get more commoditized, crowded, as the product offerings were changing right before our eyes, and maybe we weren't changing with them quick enough, your business can stall. You're then hiring great people, but great people are not willing to stay once they realize that it's a top-down, all-or-nothing approach. And I was aware enough that I didn't want to lose amazing people that we worked hard to put in our company. And I think that was the epiphany for me, Rebecca. And that's when I was handed the book Scaling Up and the Rockefeller Habits back in early 2002. I said, this type of mindset is not sustainable to attract and keep A player leaders and talent if we don't open up their ability to contribute, to be autonomous and make great decisions and trust them to make those decisions.
That's fascinating, Herb, that you were aware of this. You recognized that you needed to make a change in the business. How did you go about implementing that? Because there may be listeners who are going through a transition or a change in their own leadership style. So what tips might you pass on to somebody who is in that sort of transition process?
Yeah, so we have a tool within the Scaling Up Performance Platform, which is called the Functional Accountability Chart. And it lists the key functions from sales and marketing to operations and finance. And if I had to be really truthful, when we started to fill in who is accountable for each of these, I'd have to say I was in four or five of them. And that wasn't allowing other people to truly own their function. And then ultimately, I was only in a function a fraction of a time. So I was completely ineffective at any one function because I was doing three or four of them at the same time. So I think the epiphany was using that tool and ultimately putting an A player, independent leader in each of those functional roles. So ultimately, I could spend more time working on the business than working in it. And that was the evolution of how we kind of developed this amazing team of elite leaders.
I'm intrigued to hear how you sold that in to other senior members, maybe your family members in the business, and help them to recognize that you needed to make this shift. Was that a challenging situation?
It was, because I don't know if everybody saw it the same way I did. But Rebecca, I think what ultimately worked at the end of the day, it's not anything I said to them. It was the results we were starting to deliver that spoke for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes actions speak louder than words. And we were focused on one new functional leader per quarter, one area in the company that would we focus on at a time. We wanted to do everything all at once, as you know. That's what entrepreneurs do. We mm-hmm. touch a lot of things. But we learned was we didn't want to disrupt the business. We wanted to evolve it. And by thoughtfully picking the next seat on the, I call it the bus, it's your company, but by thoughtfully picking the next function that was most critical to that moment in the company's journey that could benefit from the next 100% focused A player, over time, quarter after quarter, the leadership team came into formation, and I could literally spend 4 days a week working on the company and literally 1 day working in it. But that was a 2 to 3 year journey. That did not happen overnight.
I think that's such an important point to make, Herb. We know many business owners are up to their neck in doing and not having enough time, trying to get the balance right between work and family and other commitments. And these changes, these important changes that you've just outlined, take time to bed in and yes. materialize. And I think we've got to manage expectations on that.
Now, I'm going to tell you one more thing, because sometimes you'll have an important number two in your company.
Mm-hmm.
And they normally get a lot of things delegated to them from the CEO.
Yeah.
And so I was very sensitive that every quarter, versus working on the phase chart to make Herb's life more simpler and more focused, some quarters we had a look at that number two, who was also maybe handling two or three functions in the company, and we had to lighten their load first by getting them another key functional hire, and would normally go between work on the CEO, only being in the CEO seat versus marketing, sales, whatever, and then ultimately the number two, which could have been operations. They could have had operations in finance and IT or HR, and we tried to slowly help them as well. And over time, I was watching their bandwidth because I didn't want them to burn out or leave. So it's very important that it's not only about you and the phase chart journey, it's about balancing the workload and the work-life balance of the other people on that team.
And that is what it's so much about, isn't it? Caring about and knowing your team and taking that into deep consideration. So you've outlined a very structured process that you took, and we've talked about the five key components of a high impactful CEO. I'm so excited to get into Rockefeller Habits. I can't wait to get into that. But just before we go into that, Herb, when you were recruiting this team, bearing in mind that you said growth in the market and growth mindset are critically important.
Yep.
When you were recruiting your team in these key roles, how did you measure their mindset and how did you prioritize that over skills they might have? Because I think this might be one that many CEOs wrestle with. Do we recruit for skills and mindset, a blend of the both, or one over the other? What's your take on that? And what did you do?
We were very focused on core value hiring and purpose alignment.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think of your core values, we all have multiple core values that we are, that make us who we are. But I want to find the few shared core values that we can all come together in the way we work and behave. So the first part of our interview process was, do we have core value alignment? So if teamwork or integrity or innovation or achievement, which were our core values, were part of the interviewing process, by the type of questions we would ask, we would uncover whether or not they were equally aligned to it like us. Because when you're working together in challenging environments, if we don't equally value teamwork or integrity or achievement, then we're going to have a miscommunication, a misgap, and that's going to create drama and poor execution and higher turnover. The second part was our purpose. We were very aligned to meaningful employment and not looking at a resume database of a million people, which is what we had, a million person resume database. We were around 54 years as a company, but that number didn't matter to me. What mattered to me is improving the quality of life one relationship at a time. That person I was interviewing or on the phone with was the most important person in the world to me. And if we had people that thought that way, then every person we placed on every job would have a level of service and commitment that would be distinctive in the industry. And that's what we truly loved and believed.
If you had to summarize that, Herb, into one tip, a top tip for a CEO or a founder or an entrepreneur growing their business, aiming to scale it, finding the right people, could you condense that into one tip that one thing you absolutely must do when you're recruiting for senior executives in your business?
Yeah. I think if you can clarify your purpose and you can share stories about how your purpose energizes, inspires, and directs the team. And if you're willing to commit to clarifying your core values, really uncovering them, one of the challenges CEOs make is they want aspirational core values. We want to be innovative, but we're not now. No, you have to look at what are you now, even if it's only the founder, if it's a small company, and then hire people with diverse experiences, cultures, backgrounds, but have shared value alignment. And if you can stay true to that, uncovering them and hiring them and telling stories that aspire people to want to connect to them, you will have a great hiring strategy because it will be like a repellent to anybody that doesn't feel that way. It will turn them away from your company, and that's what you want.
I also love that, Herb, because it's very transparent. It's about saying, this is where we are now. We aspire to be here, but we're not right now. And this is where we need your skills and expertise.
Yeah. To help Rebecca, us. One final comment, because I think it's very important. The CEO can value innovation individually. And I want them to know that they can have individual values, which are very important to them. But we want to find, in addition, the few shared values most of us have.
Yeah.
So retain your individuality, your identity. I never want you to lose that. But for the company, look for the few that we all share together.
Yeah, that's such an excellent and well-made point, Herb. Thank you. We must hold on to that individuality, but we must have that collective perspective.
Yes.
Of values and what's important. Now, can we get into Rockefeller habits? And
yes.
Can you tell us what those are?
So if you're familiar with John D. Rockefeller, he was the founder, an amazing business person that built Standard Oil into a global conglomerate, which is now Exxon Mobil gas and oil. Vern Harnish, the author of the book Scaling Up, researched the business practices of John D. Rockefeller and created the 10 Rockefeller habits. What did John do to create this amazing business enterprise? And if I don't have an MBA and I didn't go to grad school, how do I keep it simple to implement these 10 practices to help my company grow? And he researched and he created the book Scaling Up, and he also created a separate book. I would say Scaling Up would be great for the senior leaders in your company. And there's another book, Mastering the Rockefeller Habits, which would be good for middle managers and the rest of the company, because it's a playbook for how to implement the habits in your company, which is truly implementing the scaling up performance platform in your company.
Well, I have to admit, I haven't read either of those books. So I am very excited to find out what those 10 habits are.
Do you want me to review some of them, or do we have enough time? Or
we do have some time. So please, give us some of those, the most effective ones or the most poignant ones to you.
So number one, do you have a healthy and aligned executive team? It's the only habit that has to be done in order. The other 9 can be done situationally based upon where your company's at.
Okay.
But simply, if your executive team is not healthy and aligned, you can't implement the other 9.
Yeah.
Okay. Number 2, does everybody know the number one thing, the main thing that needs to be accomplished this quarter to move the company forward?
Yeah, I love that because it's so focused and we want everybody to be aligned and behind that to make it happen.
Yeah. Number 3, communication rhythms are established and information flows through the organization accurately and quickly. Number 4, does every facet of the company have a person assigned to it that is accountable for ensuring the goals are met? Does the marketing team have somebody? Does the sales team have somebody? The finance team? Number 5, are you collecting ongoing employee feedback that helps you better identify obstacles and opportunities in the business? This is bi-directional. Number 1, market-facing client opportunity and obstacle. And number 2, internally, employee-based environment issues. Number 6, are you reporting and analyzing customer feedback as frequent and accurate as you do the financial information in your company?
That's a good point. Yeah.
Number 7, are the core values and purpose alive in your organization, or are they just in the employee handbook and listed on the website? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Number 8, can all of your employees accurately articulate the various components of your strategy? Do they know who your core customer is? Do they know your big, hairy, audacious goal? Do they know the elevator pitch? And do they know the top 3 brand promises that you tell every one of your customers? Do they know them? And do they understand how well you're delivering them? Number 9, can all employees in the company quantitatively tell you whether or not they had a good day or a good week? And number 10, the company's plans and performance are visible to everyone throughout the company. Rebecca, each of those habits has 4 elements within it, and that's the journey we help clients go in from education to adoption to mastery of the 10 habits as they're scaling their company.
Well, that is very extensive, lots in there, which, I particularly liked the customer feedback reporting as important as your financial reporting.
Yes. Now, what is the benefit of all this? These journeys to think about a real dramatic change, an impactful change, 12 to 36 months. Normally, we see clients that can 2x their cash flow, triple their industry profitability, and 10x the valuation of their companies. And I have multiple examples where we have seen clients do this over and over and over and enjoy their company with less drama. So I had one business owner that was really frustrated with their company, literally saying, I'm going to sell. I can't stand it anymore. And I said, well, if you were operating your company differently, if you were open to maybe different ways of doing this, do you think you could ever fall back in love with your company again? I'm not sure, but I know I can't keep doing what I'm doing now. And over the course of that 12 to 30 month journey with him, he actually fell back in love, had an amazing leadership succession where he just didn't sell out. He brought in a junior senior executive, coached them up, and that executive is buying the business from him while he stays active, enjoying the business over the next 10 years, but also ensuring a legacy of continuation for that leader and the other people in the company. That was such a beautiful story. I was so proud of him. I was so happy for him. But you wouldn't, well, you would realize how much, how often that happens today to a lot of business owners. Their dream turns into a nightmare and they don't know how to wake up.
Yeah, it becomes more of a monster to them that they feel they have to feed than the enjoyment that they can get from it and the pleasure. And that's just such a phenomenal story. And you're rightly proud and pleased for him.
Yeah, or for that I think my final advice would be the business owner deserves to build the business that supports them, not be a slave to the business that's entrapped them.
Yeah. Yeah. And over 12 months, they will start to see massive improvements in that. Yeah.
Improvements in their culture, improvements in their market strategy, improvements in their execution and performance, and improvements in their cash flow in the way that they're managing their investments, which in turn lowers the risk that they have in a business that's not operating well. We know a bad company, an owner is overworked, underpaid, and still takes 100% of the risk.
Yeah.
Who the heck would want to do that for the next 10 years?
Yeah. I think that probably the additional shift that they would see is in themselves, their own, how they are feeling, and their own mindset, their own health, their own, you know, lots of personal benefits as well, less stress.
Yeah. Rebecca, and that's a wonderful point. The two things happened during that transition. Number one, the CEO is so used to working in the business, they don't know how to work on it. And then the senior leaders are so used to having the CEO working in the business, having that level of they make the decisions, that they go through a learning curve of how to be independent, how to be more autonomous, how to be more accountable with more authority. So it's this beautiful thing you see evolve and play out of these people becoming wonderfully independent and the CEO changing their paradigm to know how to work on the business versus in it. It's just a beautiful process.
You have shared so much with us today, Herb. Thank you so much. It's been really fascinating to hear the impactful CEO, the five key components that you shared with us, and the 10 Rockefeller habits. I think I need to make a note to read that book. It sounds amazing. And what would you like to share as we come to a close with our audience? Anything. It could be a project, how to get in touch with you. What would you like to share?
Yeah, if anybody would like to take the High Impact CEO scorecard to see where they're at in their High Impact CEO transformation, go to my website at Aspire Growth Advisors with an S at the end.com. You'll see information about scaling up. You'll get a chance to get some free downloads and growth toolkit. But most importantly, you'll get to assess yourself in where your high impact CEO score is. And just thank you, Rebecca. It's been a pleasure being here today.
It's been delightful to have you, Herb. And to our listeners, let's not forget the extensive level of experience that Herb has in growing his own family business and in helping others. So Herb, thank you very much indeed. It's been amazing to have this conversation with you.
Have a wonderful week and all the best to your listeners. And I hope you all keep scaling up.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to our podcast. And as always, if you enjoyed it, we welcome a review. And if you have any questions and like to get in touch with us, you can do that at the rjen.co.uk website.